This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
We are local.
Local, we are local. You know, it depends local. On what definition you use.
The Spanish or English.
Yeah, whichever, you know. Well, welcome to the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, and this is my kind of day. It's only, what, 80 degrees, maybe 81?
78, it says.
78? Even better, baby. Oh, I love it. And when I got up, you know, I get up pretty early, you know, yeah. daylight or so. And I look outside, and I got fog in my valley. I said, fog? This is almost July, and I got fog? And it was foggy almost all the way to Winston this morning. And then it was high fog. And it really didn't start clearing out for, you know, a couple more hours. And I thought, boy, it's a cold day. I'm glad I brought my jacket, man.
Yep.
This is almost July.
That's all good for the trees that got...
Oh, yes, yes. The plants love it.
Yeah.
And I have no complaint.
Well, I was just telling you about that vine outside my apartment.
The super vine.
Yeah. The lady next door, I believe it's her, keeps cutting it down.
Is it on your side of the fence?
It's on mine.
And
yeah.
She cuts it down?
Yeah, she cuts it right down. And then, well, this time, it was a couple of days back she did that over the weekend. I checked it on Monday, and bingo, it was at least, what is that, about?
Foot?
A foot long. It was back with more little babies.
Oh yeah. And as we were talking before, that's when I tell people about pruning, and we're talking about pruning, and a lot of folks are afraid to prune because it hurt. It doesn't hurt it.
Oh,
it just energizes that plant.
It certainly
whatever
did this
kind
one.
Of plant it is. Some are quicker than others, but it, you know, there's less top to feed, but the root system is still the same. And so all that energy goes up, and all of a sudden, boom, new growth comes. And it's like on your super weed, you cut the top, and it goes, yeah, right, watch this, Jack.
We'll come back.
By sundown, I'll be a foot tall.
Yes, that was about the way it was.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Well, welcome. And this is a talk show about gardens and things and plants. And I'm even going to talk about animals today.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to talk about worms and hummingbirds.
Oh, and bumblebees.
Bumblebees are fish, remember?
That's right. I forgot.
Oh, goodness. Anyway, thank you for listening. And this is an information show. And if you have a question, don't hesitate to call. Ask your question. No matter what I'm speaking about, I shall interrupt myself and answer your question as good as I can, which is really, really good. So, number is 673-4464 if you have a question about your garden, your trees, your shrubs, your vegetables. You know, I don't want to say anything about sidewalks or decks, but, you know, the plants things, those are my thing. I can do that. So, vermiculture, if you've never heard of vermiculture, in plain English, is simply worm farming.
Okay.
Yeah, I was a worm farmer back in the day. I got started because, I saw an ad or heard an ad about, you know, how you could make money doing worm farming and all that kind of stuff. So I went to Grants Pass or Rogue River. That's where this guy was stationed. And he gave us a tour and gave us a lecture, and I actually bought a pound of worms. And in a pound of worms, there's 1,000 worms, basically. Mm. And, you know, here's what you do, this is how you do it, and blah, 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 blah. And it was good. And from that 1 pound, I probably raised, 20 pounds.
In a short
time. Oh, yeah. And they work fast. I mean, before you know it, you go, where in the world did all these worms come from?
Jeez.
And all the moms and dads, they, you know, kind of wiggle their tail and say, hi, from us. You know, here we are. But vermiculture is raising worms, worm farming. You can raise them for your garden improvement, basically. Worms eat, this is good, leftover veggies, manure, and lots of other stuff, and they turn it into great organic soil.
Coffee grounds, they seem to like those.
Yes, that's exactly. That's one of the high points on the worm food list is coffee grounds.
Keeps them going.
Yeah, they work fast that way. They're really hyper worms. But they are super great for your garden. They aerate the soil. They make compost in your soil. They take bad, ugly stuff and turn it into growable soil so that it's healthy. And that's what they do. They just improve soil. And they just make great organic soil because of the worm castings after they eat their leaves or vegetables or, whatever you might be feeding them. Then it goes through their system and out comes the compost. And you think, well, how can one little worm give you all that compost? Well, when you got several thousand of them in there doing that every day, you can rack up a pretty good supply of organic material very, very quickly. Now, in this soil, you can grow excellent vegetables, because there's nothing better, or shrubs or trees or, whatever you're going to grow in your landscape or in your garden. Yeah. And this is like nutrient-rich natural fertilizer, and basically it's called worm castings. So if you are very in tune with the organic farming and things like that, which I am half and half, I use chemical stuff, but I like to get good composting material to begin with. And I have, at the nursery out in the back field, I have probably, maybe 100 yards of good organic material that I've collected over the years from clients, basically leaves and grass clippings, and we pile them in a place because I just don't want to go to the dump and throw them away. Right. So I got 8 acres there, so I start piles of this stuff. Well, it's all green, and the leaves are sitting there, and the grass clippings are green, and after a while, 6 months, they're kind of brown and crunchy almost, and another 6 months goes by, and where did the leaves and the grass grow?
They're black.
It's soil at that point.
Oh,
and on the bottom of the pile, and some of my piles are as big as this room, which is, 10 by 10, easy?
Yeah.
And, probably 7-8 feet tall, and if you take your tractor and put your bucket in there and get into the bottom of the pile, it's just the nicest, richest soil you could possibly have and manufacture. And we use that in some of our small landscaping jobs simply because if somebody only wants, say, 2 or 3 trees planted, and I always ask them, what kind of soil you got? Oh, it's hard clay, or it's rock, or it's this, or it's that. And we incorporate that into the planting of their trees or their shrubs, whatever they have. And it ensures, it's a very good insurance policy, that everything that we plant is going to live and grow really well, and regardless of the surrounding soil, it'll get started. And once that root system is vigorous and growing quickly, then it can get into the bad soil, if you will. It'll slow down a bit, but it has just the super strength to go.
Keep rolling
because versus you dig a hole in clay, stick the tree or the shrub in there and put the clay back and stomp on it. That's a recipe for plant death.
Yep.
I mean, that's what happens. And this also has, good drainage, and you can't hardly overwater because it drains right through and it stays damp. Doesn't stay soaky. Mm-hmm. It goes through, but it stays damp. So the new roots that come out on whether there's a shrub, tree, flower, whatever, they've hit the jackpot right there. They're growing. They're saying, man, this guy knows how to plant us,
This is the cream of the top.
Is the cream of the crop, baby. I love it. But like I say, it's a very nutrient-rich natural fertilizer. That's what it is. And so if you don't want to use a commercial fertilizer, that's fine. You can plant your materials. My whole vegetable garden, for instance, at home, I got raised beds, and I probably put 20 yards of this material into my raised beds. I've got, there's two of them now, but there probably 20 yards of material. And so you water, you know, you water in the evening and the vegetables are, you know, right there, and it doesn't pool up. It sinks right down into it.
Yeah.
And my plant beds are 2.5 feet tall. Yeah, probably 2.5 feet tall. So I know I don't have any wet spots. I know that none of those vegetables' roots are going to rot because that water, not all of it just instantly goes through, but it drains through and it leaves enough moisture so that the plant materials, especially the vegetable roots, can grab a hold of whatever they need and they grow well.
Actually can do some good.
Exactly, exactly. That's when you get your best results, and you don't have to do any chemical fertilizing after that. It's pretty much, but I've to experiment, I have used some granular commercial fertilizer on some of the things just to see, is there a difference here? You know, is it going to grow faster? Is it going to look better, or is it going to die? Or, you know, and I don't try to overdose it, but just give it the regular amount that you would do, and it seems to help. But I think the soil that we used initially is the gangbuster that makes it all happen.
Right.
So, and as I visited various clients over the years, there was one fellow out in, I'll pass the country club, whatever, that Fisher Road or Page Road, past the country club down, anyway.
It goes, I think it's Fisher Road.
Yeah, it goes to the right and out that way.
Yeah.
Well, he was a client of mine for a few years, and I saw his raised bed garden, and he did it a little bit, his was a little more expensive because he built his raised beds on legs, so he didn't have to bend over at all. He and his wife would just stand there, and their garden, one garden bed would probably be, say, 6, maybe 7 feet long and 3 feet wide and a foot deep of this good soil, and all their vegetables were right there. So
that's the way to do it.
Yeah, you just stand there and you weed or pick or prune or do that, and he must have had at least 10 of these built-up garden beds, and they had a tremendous amount of vegetables and even flowers growing all the time.
Nice.
Yeah. But anyway, when you have organic material and you add worm castings, you got the best of all worlds right there, because the worm castings, like I said, are just super, super rich nutrition. That's natural. I mean, it really, really, really
can't
works.
Get any more organic than that.
No, that's about as organic as you can get, baby. Oh boy, but the material can benefit your garden in many ways. It can change your existing compost. When you put the compost or the organic matter from the worm bins in there, and red wiggler worms and earthworms will break down organic material very rapidly. So let's say you feed your worm beds manure or lettuce or leftover vegetables or something like that, and they can just devour that very quickly. You'd be a surprise.
Jeez.
You can't. I've never seen a worm open its mouth ever, and I've collected a jillion worms when I was a kid, and I never could tell which end was the face.
No. I guess to a worm it don't matter.
I know it doesn't really. Maybe it's in the middle of the worm.
Oh,
I'm not
there's
sure.
A joke there. I got to leave it alone.
Okay, no jokes. Family show. But the end product of this operation has a higher amount of humus, which can improve the aeration and the water retention. And water retention, but it doesn't pool up, it just doesn't rot roots. It's perfect. And when you plant landscapes, like we did a little landscape for one of my clients this morning, and her ground was as hard as this counter. I mean,
jeez.
And we had to take out, I think five or seven big, large shrubs she didn't want anymore because they were getting too big, and plant smaller growing ones. Well, and then there was rock all over. Instead of bark mulch, there was rock. So here we are moving the rock back so we can dig down and remove these large plants and, you know, go throw them away because couldn't save them. And then, so in each planting hole, when we planted her smaller plants, that's what we used was our organic material.
Organic.
and it, I know they'll live. I know they'll root out very quickly. And the hole, of course, that was dug was probably a good 2.5 times the size of the pot. So it has plenty of room, you know, depth-wise and side-wise to get going. But worms do it all, baby. I mean, the
cheap labor, too.
They don't charge you anything. they're good. Do we have a break?
We do. Okay. We do.
I'll be back with more worm stories.
Hey, are there any difference between those kind of worms and night crawlers?
Yeah, night crawlers are bigger.
Of course. All right.
How's that for an answer?
Well, that's a one-liner.
Smart Alex.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Mama Mia, you want to share that story on the air?
I don't want to share that story.
Okay. It was about worms.
Yeah, it was about worms and where we got them, their origins.
Super organic.
Yeah, very organic. Oh, golly. But vermicompost is that end product that the worms produce. And it's very rich in nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and it's just a natural fertilizer. It's something you don't have to buy, and it contains both macronutrition and micronutrients that benefit and stimulate plant growth, which can increase your yield. That's simple. The plant is healthier. It's eating good stuff, and consequently it produces good stuff.
It feels good.
Let's do good tomatoes, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
And natural fertilizer, i.e. worm castings, are less expensive than commercial fertilizer. Of course, it takes, if you just are beginning to get into this kind of thing, it'll take a while before you get enough compost together that you can actually do something. But it works. And like I say, if you compost your leaves and your grass clippings in back corner of your yard and let them sit for a year, when you turn that over, you've got this black, loose, beautiful soil. And if you throw some worms in there, too, they love that. And they will enhance that as well.
Geez.
Because and you don't want to throw, like I say, you could put vegetables in there, not filled with a Thousand Island.
They don't like the dressing.
They don't like the dressing. They like the raw stuff.
Yeah.
And if you throw that in there, they'll stay. They won't go away because they're being well fed. They don't have to work for it.
We found a home.
Yeah, we found a good home. They feed us all the time, man. I love them carrots and beets.
How about eggshells?
Yes, eggshells, coffee grounds. I've got a list of things further down that you go, what? Worms eat those? They love them. They grow. I mean, that's what I don't know what the vermiculture or the end result has chemically speaking, but it's A+. It's good stuff. You can't you can't find it anywhere. I mean, they duplicate fertilizers on a commercial basis. You know, if everybody had to grow worms to fertilize their gardens,
we wouldn't need Ukraine.
We'd starve to death.
Wouldn't need Russia or Ukraine for the fertilizer.
No, we wouldn't. So you might be asking yourself, well, how do I get started? Well, you build a worm bin. And I started with like a wooden footlocker box in my garage, and I bought 1 pound of worms from this guy I was talking about earlier in Grants Pass, and he was a super worm farmer. When I went to his seminar, it was in this big barn, and he must have had 100 worm bins in it. Yeah, and all of them were chock full of these worms, and he had a machine in there that if you scooped up shovelfuls of the worm castings and there's worms in there, he would put this in the, it's like a vibrating tunnel and you put the whole mess of the soil and the castings all together, and then it shakes, and then the worms get to the bottom of the thing, and then the castings fall through the holes. So you separate. That's how you separate the worms from their
what they produce. I was wondering about that.
Yeah, well, it was amazing. I thought, this is cool. I said, how much one of those cost? Oh, about 10 grand. Oh, yeah, 10 grand. Okay, baby.
I'll do it by hand.
Yeah. give me 10 of them. But in his presentation, he told us that he sold worms to France. France, Germany, and some other country over
China.
There. China? No, not China. But in that European area.
Oh, in that
England.
Yeah.
England.
Okay.
And they actually use them in food. They, they're such filled with protein, and they're good. I guess they dry them and grind them or whatever and mix them with certain food. They eat them. And he was being paid at that point in time $2 a pound. For worms. So that's what really got my attention. And so I thought, well, shoot, I can do that.
I wouldn't eat one after what you had described what they do eat.
Yeah, but you wouldn't know it because it's seasoning. It's already cooked, man.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you know. And so you can eat them and put them in your garden, too.
Yeah.
I've never eaten a worm, honest.
Really? Not even when you were a little kid?
Well, maybe when I was a kid.
Yeah.
My dad probably gave me one. I didn't know it, and he said it was candy.
Right. He was a little candy worm.
Yeah, it wiggles, but don't worry. But, you know, they're health food, for crying out loud. So, at any rate, that was the market that I was shooting for at first.
Yeah.
But then, for whatever reason, he moved away, and so that source moved away, and I thought, what's the point? So I just continued to raise the worms in this footlocker thing.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was amazing how quickly they multiplied. You know, when you start out with a pound of worms, and then, you know, within 3 months, there's 3 pounds of worms.
In that little box.
And that, well, it was it's the kind of wooden box that you stick in the back of your pickup truck.
Oh, with a lid. Okay, I was thinking like an army type.
No. It's much bigger. It was like, 4 feet long and 2 feet deep and 2 feet wide.
Room to grow.
Yeah, room to grow, and they did. So at that point in time, me and a friend, we were kind of doing this together. It was before I lived out on my property where I live now. We built a worm house with metal roof, no sides, but a metal roof. And then we built these worm bins out of 2x6s, 2x12s.
Yeah.
They were 10 feet long, 3 feet wide, and I think I had 10 of them. I'm not sure, 10 or 12. And so we divvied up our worms, and we filled the boxes with the organic material that we had. And there was a food source down the road from me a few miles. It was called Northcraft Dairy.
Dairy.
And we could get very cheap worm food.
Mm-hmm.
And you just lay the manure right on top. And also, one thing I neglected to say, when you're raising worms, we covered the worms with carpet because the sun hurts them.
Oh,
and,
okay.
And this was in a shed, but still, even the daylight hurts them. So you put the manure or whatever you're feeding them, and then you put a length of carpet on top. So they're always up on the surface feeding. So if you go in there to check and see how the worms are doing, you just lift up your carpet, and they're just right on top. And as soon as the light hits them, boom, down they go.
Yeah.
You know, any light, you know, just daylight. Nothing strong, not full sun, for crying out loud. They'd run away from home.
So that explains the night crawlers with a flashlight.
Exactly.
See the light and they're gone.
Yeah, you're out there trying to get night crawlers or fishing worms or something like that, and you got your flashlight, and as soon as it hits them, bingo, they disappear.
Boy,
you got to be quick.
Faster than an electric car.
Yeah.
Sorry, Elon.
Well, he uses worms in his electric cars.
Does he?
Yeah. Okay. They run on these little wheels. Oh, gosh. But anyway, that's how I got started. And it doesn't have to be that fancy. It doesn't have to be that elaborate. You can do it in, like I say, in your backyard corner and keep them fed. They'll stay. They won't go anywhere.
Oh, okay.
Hey, it's easy pickings, man. They don't have to work. You know, nothing better than a lazy worm.
Absolutely. That goes for people, too, at times.
Yeah. And as far as the worm beds are concerned, you need to spray them with water once in a while to keep them damp.
Oh, okay.
You can't let them dry out, or the worms will go deeper, and then they won't come up to eat. So you spray them with water. You don't flood them, just like I say, damp. It's, you don't overwater your worms
don't.
And you don't overwater your plants. they operate the same way. And then these critters have little worms. And soon you have thousands of them, and you could go in the worm selling business or sell them to France or whatever. But as long as they're well fed, they stay home. They don't go anywhere. They're very obedient. And you don't have to stop any wandering worms. They don't wander anywhere. You just install a light bulb above them, so at night, when it's dark, they don't say, hey, let's get out from under the carpet here and go explore. So we would have 40-watt lights right above each bin. Mm-hmm. And so if they did come out of the carpet, the light would hit them. They go back under the carpet and stay in the boxes. That's the fence.
Clever.
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing. They got books on this stuff. I mean, I still got them in my library somewhere. how to be successful worm rancher, you know. But
101.
Yeah, 101. I had to teach this at the college.
There you go. Yeah. A little extra cash for it.
Yeah, right. Oh. But I made a quick list of their favorite foods.
Can we hold on to that after the break?
Yes. Oh, we got another one?
We do.
I'm on a roll, man.
You betcha. More with Mike Winters. Mm-hmm. On the other side, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
The more hummers discover them. You know, when we started, we had one hummingbird feeder on the front porch, and it's in the shade. They don't like sun either. It's in the shade. They don't like to eat in the sun, but because it's an overhanging porch, so it's in probably 3 feet or 4 feet from the sunlight. And it's just hanging right there. We've got these great big old lodgepole pine beams. You know, you put your first one out there, and you know, all of a sudden you got hummers, and you go, where'd they come from? I'm clear out here in, you know, Olala country, man. And I got these hummers, and pretty soon there's a couple more, and pretty soon there's a couple more, and next thing you know, you're buying another hummingbird feeder because there's too many hummers out there fighting each other to get at your sugar water.
The buzz spreads.
Oh yes, it does. And then now there's three of them out there, and they will, and they're pretty good size. I mean, they're not quite a quart, but they're more than a pint. And they got, like, each one has four little nozzle kind of things that look like flowers.
Yeah.
And and they go through that, and they're like fighting each other, and their wings are going 1,000 miles an hour, and they're just going every which way. And there might be 20 of them out there, and you know, until we put the hummingbird feeders out there, there wasn't 20. You'd see maybe one once in a while. But soon you put that sugar water out there, baby, they have a telegraph system or something. And say, hey, guess what? Over at Winter's house, they got lots of stuff, man, and it's all fresh.
The news is out.
Yeah, the news is out. Let's go get some of that stuff. So the more feeders you put out, the more hummers you're going to get. And that's simple as that.
And they're good pollinators, you say?
Oh yes, they are. They'll pollinate your vegetable flowers, your flower flowers, and they'll go from your petunias or your roses or whatever, and then they'll go to your vegetables.
Hmm.
You know, because your vegetables are also flowering.
They do not discriminate.
No, they don't. And they do fruit trees as well.
Nice.
Yeah. So they're good things. So you got the worms, you got the hummers. You got that, you eat forever, free.
There you go. And they're probably less expensive than bees. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, bees, they have a nasty habit of maybe biting you or stinging you once in a while.
Yes, they do.
And the hummers don't. And the worms sure don't.
No. We got a call.
Okay, I'm ready for a call.
Hey there, you're on the air with Mike Winters.
Well, I'm not looking for the hummingbird feeder.
Why not?
But I am looking for a little, sugar water, I think I'll pass.
Okay.
Too much of that red dye in it.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, this past summer, not this year, but last year, my lawn turned brown in a couple of places. And my neighbor says that I may have some grubs.
Right.
And I don't know if I've had them or will have them, but what do you recommend if I've got them to treat them with?
Okay, is there any evidence of the brown spots this year?
Not yet, but, you know, it's been raining and I've been watering, and nothing, no indication at this point.
Okay, as a preventive measure, you could buy some grub bait from like the co-op, and that's what it does. And then you spread, it's a granular dry substance, and you just spread it with a spreader over your lawn and water it in. And if there's any grubs down there, they'll eat it and take off and die. That's all there is to it. If you don't do that, and you start to discover brown spots here and there, you know, they start out small and pretty soon you go,
right,
wow, where'd that come from? you'll want to really, you know, do the trick then. But if you do it on a preventive maintenance basis, maybe every spring, early in the spring, and
is it too late in the spring?
No. You can actually treat it anytime, but even before you see any evidence that they might be in there, like say April, middle of April or something, give it a shot, and that will take care of any of the small ones. Now here's what happens when you don't do it. These little grubs will turn into flying insects. And they will get up there and start to destroy or eat your flowers or your shrubs or whatever. And at the end of their life cycle, they're locusts, actually. At the end of their life cycle, they go back into your lawn and lay more eggs, and where more grubs come from. So that's what you want to do, is break that cycle.
Okay. But it's not too late to spray or do a preventative?
No.
Application.
No, now. I've done it spring, summer, and fall.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
I have noticed something this spring that I don't think I've noticed in the past, or if I've noticed it, I haven't paid any attention.
Uh-huh.
But this time it looks like I've got birds that are digging little bitty holes, mm-hmm. and there are holes in the lawn that you can put your little finger in, mm. you know, down a half inch,
mm-hmm.
and the grass will be beaten down around that. And I don't know that it's a bird or some animal coming out at night. We don't see any animals during the day, and we live in town in Roseburg.
Yeah, so have you tried, when you discover these holes, have you tried maybe taking a small shovel and digging up a square of that earth, you know, maybe 4 inches by 4 inches or 5 by 5 inches, and, you know, go down about 6 inches and dig that, you know, just dig it straight up and inspect that soil and see if there's anything in there?
Well, not until today.
Okay.
But now I've got the advice.
Okay. Well, if you see that in the future, you might want to do a little exploratory, I don't know if that's the word, digging just to see if there is an animal of some sort. It sounds like worms.
Okay.
And if it's worms, it's not bad because it's just aerating your soil, which is a healthy thing for your lawn.
Okay.
That
now,
help you?
If it's grubs, though, that the birds or whatever are after,
yeah.
Will I see any of those grubs?
If you treat it with one guy, I put in a brand new sod lawn for him, and 3 months later he called me up and he says, something's got my lawn, man, it's turning brown. So I went by and half of his brand new sod lawn was brown, and it was grubs. I mean, I just took a quick shovel, and it was they're not very long. They're like half an inch long, maybe, and they're kind of segmented, and they're gray in color. They're ugly little things. And so I treated it with the grub bait, and I told him, well, go ahead and water it in, and then give me a call when he sees some activity. Well, the next day or the day after that, he called up. He says, come here, got to see the grubs. They were actually crawling out of the lawn, trying to escape. Some of them were obviously dead, but the ones that weren't quite dead were escaping, and they were going across his concrete driveway, and it looked like an oil slick. There were so many of them, and they were going over the curb into the street. That's how infested they were. And we had no idea that was in there in the soil to begin with, because when we prepped the lawn area, you know, we put good stuff in there and we did, you know, all the 1, 2, 3, you know, add this, add that, organic soil, the whole 9 yards. It was perfect when we laid the sod down. Yet, like within 2 weeks or 3 weeks, somehow the grubs were, the eggs were obviously in there, and when he was watering the new lawn, they woke up or came to or did whatever they did and started eating the grass roots.
Well, my lawn's been established for 30 plus years, and it's just in the last 2 or 3 years that I've had the brown spots, and last year they were bigger.
Yep.
Then
we'll treat it.
They've gotten bigger each year.
Well, treat it as soon as you possibly can. Have you ever thatched it or aerated it?
No, but I've mowed it real short. I've let it dry out, not watering it like in September.
Yeah,
and let it dry out real good, and then mow it as short as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I have thatched it, but just with a attachment to your lawnmower.
Sure.
And then I've reseeded.
Okay.
And so I've done that a couple of times.
Well, and that's a good first step. After you've thatched it, what you do is you can rent a machine or do it by hand. And the machine, it's like a giant rototiller, only it doesn't till the ground. It pulls plugs of soil out. And so
right.
There are holes. So then when you fertilize and water, all that fertilizer and water gets down into the root zone, and within 2 weeks you got a brand new lawn.
Yeah. So my lawn's looking good.
Good.
And I fertilize it and kind of try to stay on top of it.
Good. Keep at
now
it.
Now I'll hopefully I can get on top of the grubs.
Good. Get that grub stuff.
All right. Thank you.
Hey, you're welcome.
Appreciate it, Mike.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Thanks for the call.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right. We do have a break, and we'll be right back. 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Back with the last segment for today's program, Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show.
Yeah, and I was starting into the hummers, the hummingbirds, and what
yep.
they do and how they are and all that kind of stuff. And it's kind of a real neat thing to attract them to your yard. And the other neat thing is when it gets cold, they leave.
Yeah,
they migrate. They go south.
South, yeah.
And I read this in a book. I believe several years ago, that, you know, buzzards go south as well. And the
they can stay there.
Well, the hummingbirds attach themselves to the buzzards and get a free ride to Mexico. And they're, and in the San Pedro Mártir Mountains of Baja, that's where they winter.
I'll be darned. I didn't know that.
No, I didn't either until I started reading about this. I said, can you kidding me? No, I mean, it's real stuff.
Buzzards don't mind, apparently.
No, they give them a free ride to Mexico. And then they come back in the spring the same way. And all of a sudden, boom, there's no hummers. And the next thing you go, where did all these things come from? And they all just pop off at once.
Well, you know the buzzards are back there.
Yeah, I say, hey, take us to the winner's house. They got lots of good food there. Yeah.
Oh, Lordy. I didn't know that. That's strange.
Yeah, and if somebody wanted to, with internet capacity and knowledge, look that up and see if I'm telling the truth or not.
Yeah. Oh, Google's always there.
Yeah, Google. Guy Google, yeah. But I don't really have enough time today to get into all the stuff about hummers, so I'll do that next week.
Sounds good.
Some real interesting things about hummingbirds and what they do and how they are. And there are 14 different types of hummingbirds that frequent the Pacific.
Yeah, you're giving me the bird there.
I know. That's a black and purple and green hummingbird. Yeah, those are hummingbirds.
You wouldn't know they were that colorful.
No, you wouldn't. And there's 14 different ones that inhabit the Pacific Northwest. Mm. And I'll get into that next week, too, because, I mean, they're fascinating little birds.
Red, white, and blue?
Yeah, well, most of them.
Others just fly away.
Yeah, they'll fly away. Don't worry.
All right, that's going to wrap it up for us.
Okay, thank you for listening, if you did.
Ah, thank you, Mike. We'll be back with more of Mike Winters a week from today. Stay tuned now for the afternoon report on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.